Now, at the first, we're going to go over some very basic things here, which are not new to anybody, just expressed a little bit differently. And then we'll make the application after we have these basic things in mind. So I'd like for us to all read and follow about the same speed. Now, I know you can read better than I can, but if you just kind of follow, then our thoughts will move together. Now, I feel, as we indicate at the top of the page here, that one of the great verses in the Bible is Psalm 37:4, "Delight thyself also in the Lord, and he shall give you the desires of your heart." So anybody who isn't experiencing that, I think is settling for God's second best. But that's the normal experience, to know the desires of our heart. Okay, that's where we're going to work up to. Now, down under number 3, the physiological needs, at the bottom of the triangle, the physiological needs are said, the needs that are usually taken as a starting point for motivation theory are the so-called physiological drives. Included in these needs are the homeostatic needs. Homeostasis refers to the body's automatic efforts to maintain a constant normal state of the bloodstream, the proper water content, salt content, sugar content, protein content, fat content, and so forth. Also included in these needs are the needs for sleep, sexual activity, food, water, and so forth. These needs seem most prepotent of all needs. That is, when a person is hungry or thirsty, his whole life will probably be dominated by these needs, and his other needs may fade into the background. It is amazing to do a little research and find, I think I'm going to stand up so I can see everybody here, how much time is spent on these physiological needs. Now, as Max and those that were helping him were planning this conference and worked with some of our people, it will be interesting to find out what percentage of the time and effort went into the physiological part of a conference like this. I think we'll find that probably 75%. Of the time, maybe 85, was spent now about the food and the beds and the recreation and the temperature and all of these things, because we cannot focus our minds and attention on higher order needs as long as the lower order needs are unmet. And yesterday afternoon we were in a very uncomfortable spot over there. And I think most everybody's mind was on, you know, that it was too warm and too crowded or something of this sort. I know we get involved in quite a few conferences, and every one of them seems to have some kind of a special mark. Over in Germany, you know, their beds are a little bit different than they are in this country. So I remember we had a conference over there once, and we referred to it as a conference with the three-season beds, and they had no spring. So, talk was all about, you know, the physiological. Now, with that in mind, let's go on. Oh, one other thing I want to mention here. I read a book recently by a Jewish psychologist, and he devoted his entire first chapter to the first chapter of Genesis, describing the ideal conditions that existed in the Garden of Eden. Then he said, after things changed and Adam was driven out, things were not so comfortable. So he felt that man's primary drive is the avoidance of discomfort. So a lot of our time and energy goes into this. Now you'll see how these fit together a little bit, I trust. On the next page, we talk about the safety needs. The healthy, normal, fortunate adult in our culture is largely satisfied in his safety needs. He is relatively free from wild animals, savages, extremes of temperature, criminal assault, murder, and tyranny. Very few adults are guided primarily by effort to satisfy their needs for safety. We may see such behavior more vividly in people who are economic and social underdogs. We see these people operating. We see these needs operating when we seek a job with tenure, when we build savings accounts, and buy insurance. Now we're just introducing here. We go right ahead to the next one. The belongingness and love needs. If both the physiological needs and the safety needs are fairly well gratified, there will emerge the love and affection and belongingness needs. Now, we've edited out some things here from Dr. Maslow. He will feel keenly the absence of friends, a sweetheart, or children. He will hunger not for food or safety, but for affectionate relations with people. Again, he will mobilize all his forces to get these needs met. As we all know, unfulfilled needs for affection are at the root of the problems of many people. We must not overlook the notion that the love needs involve both giving and receiving love. Now as we go on to the next one, almost all people in our society have a need or desire for self-esteem and for the esteem of others. When these needs are thwarted, feelings of inferiority may follow. The person may feel weak and helpless. These feelings may in turn give rise to discouragement. Now we go on to number 8, the need for self-actualization. Even when we have the physiological, safety, love, and esteem needs met, we can expect that a new discontent and restlessness will soon develop unless the individual is doing what he is fitted for. What a man can be, he must be, Dr. Maslow says. This need we call self-actualization. It refers to man's desire for self-fulfillment, namely the tendency for him to become actualized in what he is potentially, to become everything that one is capable of becoming. The clear emergence of these needs usually rests upon prior satisfaction of the physiological safety, love, and esteem needs. Now we'll go back and try to put these together. What we are interested in is every person, husband, wife, children, everybody else, enjoying the desires of the heart. Completely motivated, turned on, and
no way.
Not a lack in the world. Down at the bottom of page 10, this is what we're going to build our discussion around, paragraph 10. When one of these needs is not met, all skills, resources, and intelligence may be mobilized to meet the need. A person will want the more basic of two needs when deprived of both. We do not give the impression that such lower order need must be 100% met before the next need emerges. It is as if the average citizen is satisfied 85% in his physiological needs, 70% in his safety needs, 50% in his love needs, 40% in his esteem needs, and 10% in his fulfillment needs. It should be just the other way around. Now, the first time I ever used this particular outline, I was talking just to husbands. And I asked them to go through this triangle and just give an evaluation, you know, as the head of the house, to what degree are your wife's physiological needs? And since we have a husband and wife both here, well, then we'd say the same thing. To what degree are your husband's physiological needs met? According to Dr. Maslow,
You see, the reason we call this a hierarchy, that one of these five things is always trying to get on the throne and dominate the other four. So, maybe we should make this just the opposite on here, but the degree to which all of our resources are being mobilized to meet physiological needs, we can't engage in very much else, can we? That's the reason we're so concerned about the proper temperature and the soft seats, everything else that goes on. A person whose resources are all mobilized, worrying and being concerned about physiological things, you can't get to them on a spiritual plane. So, the first step to get a husband or a wife or children turned on is that the physiological needs must be met to a large degree. Now, as we go into the next one, I asked the husbands this one time, each of them, asked them, you know, if they owned any life insurance. And I think all of them did. And I said, does your wife know how much life insurance you have? And does she know anything about your affairs? And most of the fellows in that group said that their wife did not. Now, this is what the husband had in mind in getting insurance and setting up some kind of estate plan, was to provide for the wife's security and the family's security in case anything happened to him. So one fellow told me, he said, you know, after this, I went and explained to my wife how much insurance I had and why I bought it. And he said, you know, she got real excited to find out that I was that concerned about her, because he had never told her. He just bought it. He had in mind some security for her, but he had never told her. So, if your wife is in the dark about your estate plan, you know, and your will and your insurance and so forth, why, here's a little area of concern. Now, I don't think there's too much concern, but it really gets over a little hurdle when she knows exactly what you've provided and why and how it's all going to work out. All right, now in the next one here, the belongingness and love needs. I want to turn over the page here to Ecclesiastes 1:8 on page 4. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. And Proverbs 27:20, the eyes of a man are never satisfied. And Philippians 2:13 seems to indicate that God is always at work in us. So it seems to work out that we are a restless people. Now, our first concern is for physiological satisfaction. But the minute our physiological needs are met in a degree, then we start looking at long range. What would I do if the immediate were taken away? So we plan for a little longer range. Now, the minute this is taken care of, our emotional needs come into focus. And I'm sure that you know that there are many employers that will not hire a single man, unmarried man. You know something like that, do you not? Because they know that they're not getting more than 10 or 20% of what they're paying for, because of the emotional need and hunger that he has. Why, he'll carouse all night, and all they get is the burnt-out candle that they're paying him for. So they just won't hire him, because they recognize this. Now, in this area, we talked a little bit about it yesterday, that the wife needs the assurance and the reassurance that she is still the most important person in her husband's life. And this reassurance is needed again and again. But having taken care of these three things, a husband hasn't necessarily provided for all his wife's needs, because she needs to be something more than a wife and a mother, a homemaker, and a housekeeper. So the husband wonders why in the world that she wants to go to PTA, or why she wants to participate, you know, in the March of Dimes, and this thing. Well, hasn't she got enough to do around here? Well, you see, the need exists for respect as a person, and there's a higher order need here that can't be satisfied by any of these things that we've mentioned. To be respected as a person, not just by you and the family. Now, I know here in the city of Colorado Springs, we have a colored man who operated a filling station successfully. He decided to run for city council. So he did, and he's a member of the city council. Now, I'm quite sure that he has suffered financially, because there's no pay on the city council. It takes quite a bit of time. But you see, something became more important to him than just enough money to live on. You know, wanted some respect and acceptance in the community. So you see, you can't shut a person off, a husband, wife, or anybody else, once these physical and emotional needs are met, because here comes a higher need. Well, even after a person has the respect and esteem of others and acceptance, the restlessness is still there and will exist until what Dr. Maslow calls self-actualization has come into focus. Now, this is the full maturity of a person who has discovered, developed, dedicated, and is using his or her gifts for the glory of Christ. So the only person who is really turned on and who is a complete person is the person that's reached this spot. Now, Dr. Maslow observes that whenever one of these needs is pulled out, that we revert back to it. A person that is fully actualized, fulfilled, something comes along, physiological need, we immediately revert back down here and take care of this, then start up the ladder again. So husbands, I wonder what you think about this. We'll get the wives in a little bit. In your relationship with your wives as the head of the house, is your wife really a turned on person? Is she experiencing the desires of her heart and the fulfillment of being a real person? Well, if what Dr. Maslow has outlined here has any credibility, well, this will only be true as we take care of these various things. Now, before we go on to the next part, why, let's get some feedback and some reaction here. There's one area missing in here that we're going to put in here a little bit, but I'm not going to mention that just yet.
Well, I wanted to, the one thing that just kind of hit me is like when Paul was out suffering, you know, it was just through many a sleepless night and all of this, was he not experiencing a fulfilled life, or was this part of the fulfillment? I'm kind of hazy here. You can kind of see my thing.
Okay, that's a real good question. And now let's start at 9 on page 3 here. You remember that Christ, this account in John 4, was where they'd come into Samaria, and it came noon, and all of the 12 were overpowered by their physiological needs. So they went in the city to buy food and left him out. And he talked with the woman there at the well. While he was still talking with her, they came back, and very thoughtfully they had brought him a sandwich of some kind. So when they slipped him the sandwich, why, he was almost indifferent to it. And so they were insulted a little bit that they didn't take what they'd so thoughtfully brought. And he said, I have some food that you don't know about. So they looked around and said, well, there's no McDonald's around here, and I don't see any good humor truck tracks in the sand. Who brought you some food? We didn't think anybody moved during a noon hour here. And he said, my meat is to do the will of him that sent me and to finish his work. Now, here's a full-fledged person. Occasionally, the great men of God got so involved in what they were doing that I think they were completely unaware of any of the lower order needs. But I think that it's probably not fair to take Christ as an example, but Paul, it is. That this was not a practice of life, going without food and sleep. These were just intermediate experiences in the life. So the most of us can go without these lower order needs for a while, but pretty soon we've got to go back and rebuild in order to be turned on spiritually. So I think these are isolated incidents and not the rule. All right, any other thoughts here before we go on?
Look around for Jonah. Throw him out of the boat.
Well, you know, on this self-actualization, I'm a teacher. And when I taught for several years and then stayed at home with the children, and I felt fulfilled in a sense, but I didn't have the fulfillment that I, respect that I had when I was a teacher. And I needed that. And Melvin can tell you that I'm a better person when I'm teaching, because I have more self-respect. And I don't know whether this is good or bad or not, but just for me, that seems to work.
Okay, I think it's a mighty good illustration of what we're going to talk about. Now, we'll work this into a spiritual atmosphere, I trust, before we close. We're just operating on this level right now, but I think this is a good illustration of what we're talking about. Okay? Anybody else? Comment.
Would the example of Paul, when he said, I have learned whatever state or condition that I am in, therewith to be content. If this basic contentment with life is not a part of this fulfilled person, and I think probably we vary in that with which we are content as Christians. I would like to think that I could be content with as little as Paul was, but I'm not sure.
Yes, and I think that's exactly right. Now, you note under 9 here, I actually have got 3 illustrations. Here, the first is Christ. The second is Paul in the book of Philippians that you just quoted from. You know, he said he had learned. Now, I think Paul was a fulfilled and a turned-on person. All his life, every place we see it. I think he was deprived of some of these lower order needs. But again, I say that I think he was an exception. And that particularly the people that we're dealing with, if we try to make a Paul out of him, it just, it just doesn't work. Now, let me give another illustration. Jack, we were back in D.C. at summer task force. I don't know if you remember this incident or not.
Back to battery.
Yeah. But I asked one of the team leaders. That wasn't on your team, was he? This guy?
I remember you doing that. I saw you do it.
I heard a little commotion outside the window, and there was a 56 Buick out there. A fellow was trying to get started, and there were five or six people that were passengers to ride to work with him. And the old thing didn't have much compression. The battery wasn't very strong. He just couldn't get enough compression for it to fire. So everybody kicked the tires and lifted the, throughout them. Everybody tried their lot. And I think finally the Lord just miraculously started things. So I've seen this happen as they went off to work. Well, later in the day, I was talking with some of the team leaders in this training program. And I said, what are you going to hit when the fellows come home tonight? So he said, well, this week the emphasis is scripture memory. And I said, you're really going to try to get them motivated to memorize scripture? He said, yeah, we're going to hit it. And I said, well, there's one guy that you won't have much luck with. And he says, what do you mean? So I told him what had happened. I said, now, from the time he gets home until the time he gets up in the morning, he's going to wonder whether or not that car's going to start. And he'll be late to work. And no matter what you do, this is what he's going to be preoccupied with. So the team leader said, well, what do you suggest we do? And I said, go out and buy him a new battery. And when he comes home from work tonight, present him with the battery. Because you can't just say to a person, you know, be thou turned on. Because all of his resources are being mobilized in concern and trying to do something about this unmet need, a lower order. And I said, this is what you can do in a practical way. So, when we're trying to get people motivated and turned on, I think we have to operate on a very practical level and just starting at the bottom. See that their minimal needs are met. Now, this applies to your children, the people you're working with. As I look at this group, I think more about people that are working with other people and that are counseling than I think about you. Okay, this, I think of the most of us, you see, this is just the way it happens. Paul was an exception. I think maybe David was an exception. But he said in this testimony, I think he was pretty preoccupied with running the kingdom, but he said, thou hast given the king his heart's desire. He was a fulfilled, turned on person. So it looks like we've got just about two opposites here, doesn't it? That Paul was fulfilled and turned on with practically nothing. David was fulfilled and turned on, and I guess he lacked nothing in his kingdom there. Well, what my question is, I've got some more to add on to this in a little bit, to the husband. Is your wife a totally fulfilled person? And if she isn't, do you have some responsibility? And is there something you can do about it? And if you don't do it, why, it just may not get done. And the same way, turn around to the wife, that she has within her power a great deal of the resources that will help her husband be a real turned on person. Now, I've heard the statement, as I know you have, that every successful man outmarries himself. Okay. Now, maybe you don't believe a word of this or agree with it, that this is even pertinent at all to Christian life. Well, if you don't, speak up, say so. Let's learn together here.
Well, I don't know whether it's criticism or not, but
a great deal of the resources that will help her husband be a real turned-on person. Now, I've heard the statement, as I know you have, that every successful man outmarries himself. Okay. Now, maybe you don't believe a word of this or agree with it, that this is even pertinent at all to Christian life. Well, if you don't, speak up, say so. Let's learn together here.
Well, I don't know whether it's criticism or not, but I'm kind of stumbling over that triangle just a little bit from the standpoint that I don't see a single one of those needs except for the physiological need, which can be met maybe only by a physician or something like that, medication, that the fullness of Christ in your life will not reduce the desire for in other areas. The security need, the belongingness and love, these are all things that, at least in my concept of a fulfilled Christian life, will be met to a great degree by your relationship with Christ, the respect of people. You're not playing to people anymore, you're playing to Jesus Christ. To me, this is why Paul was capable of suffering and still living the fulfilled, turned-on life.
Okay. Now, let me say that I agree with you completely, and so you've introduced us right into the next point. Over in on page 4, now to continue. In the Dale Carnegie courses, one of the things that is taught is that fatigue is due to boredom. And they have an illustration of the young girl who came home from work, and she was so tired and fatigued that she couldn't even make the bedroom. She grabbed a coat out of the refrigerator and passed out on the couch. Well, pretty soon the phone rang. And, she had managed to drag herself over to the phone and found out that on the other end of the wire was a young man down at work that she had hoped, sometime would notice her, but had no indication that he had. But it was he, and he wanted a date. Well, she really came alive. And her boredom disappeared completely, or her fatigue disappeared completely. And at 2 o'clock in the morning, she still had some reserve energy as they were out on the town. So, in a large sense, a fatigue is due to boredom. The person that enjoys their work just goes on and on. The person that doesn't, they can hardly tolerate it. And the clock just doesn't move. Now, the way this study came about, the industrial psychologists found out that there were only two ways to motivate the person that worked in a factory. Well, it really just it comes down to one. They said that pay raises, new titles, bigger offices are somewhat hollow gestures without increased responsibility and an accompanying challenge. So the way industry found out, the only way they could get more for their money is to give a person a job that challenged him. And so his fulfillment was in his work. That's what turned him on. Now, they had to meet all these basic things, but having met the basic things, then this is really what turned him on. Now, this is exactly what Christ said in John 4:34. He told the disciples, "My meat, my fulfillment is to do the will of my Father and to finish his work." So I think this is what you're saying and we agree on. You see, that the ultimate in a man's life is when he is involved in the work that God has gifted and called him to do, and then he's doing it. He or she is a fulfilled person. And then these things below are minimal. But
when one of them is withdrawn completely. I think we're talking about something a little bit. You're talking about a relationship to Christ. I've known Christians who had marital problems, and I feel this very adversely affects either effectiveness, financial reverses. So I think I've seen where that the withdrawing of any of these so-called lower order needs do adversely affect a person's relationship and their effectiveness. And so to get back to the peak, why they have to be rebuilt and restored. But the fulfilled person is the one who has discovered, dedicated, developed, and is using his or her gifts for the glory of Christ. And this is when fulfillment comes. Now, the thing that's missing out of Maslow's triangle, and I don't know just where it belongs, but it belongs at least between the belongingness and love and the respect needs or the spiritual needs. Maybe it's more basic. I don't know where it fits in. But my wife teaches a Bible class here in the city, kind of a citywide thing, and has 300 or 400 women that she's involved with every week. And she got some feedback the other day that somebody said, well, you know, this isn't necessary. Well, they're really seeing a lot of lives transformed in that thing. And what she said was, she said, well, I don't know a husband, you know, that brought this report that would allow his wife to go without a physical food, and yet almost totally indifferent to their, you know, spiritual diet. So again, we're thinking primarily of husbands in here, whose job it is to see that all of his wife's spiritual needs are provided for also. So that belongs in the triangle. That's the one that's missing. Well, let's have some more feedback. Now, do you think we're together on this thing here, maybe?
I do. I still have a little problem with this whole area, because in thinking in terms of how many people in the world have what portion of these needs fulfilled, kind of warps my concentration on, you know, how can you expect, if this triangle is accurate and true, how can you expect to go someplace where people are really deprived and expect one of these people to really live a fulfilled Christian life?
Yes, well, now, my experience in the some of the underprivileged countries is that they really don't have the basis for comparison, you know, that we have over here. Now, that might not be true in our own country, but Korea and some of the other places that I've been in. Some of the most turned on Christians that we're in contact with are in Korea, because they have a minimal need, and it takes so little to satisfy these lower order things, I think. Well, I wouldn't say with the emotional realm, but they really find great fulfillment in Christ, and it overshadows these others.
A lot of our needs, seems to me like in this triangle, are psychological in a way, our emotional needs. And to me, rather than having the Christ part right up the top, Christ is something maybe changes the color of the triangle or something.
Well, I think I see what you're talking about.
I haven't quite got into the meaning of the triangle in the first place. But.
Well, let me go over this again. You know, we're not disagreeing. We'll throw everybody in here that has a comment to say. The background of this study and presentation is that I feel that probably two-thirds of the Christians that I know, and I've made actual surveys, are in some degree inhibited in their Christian outreach. And there's an inhibiting factor. And my desire is that they get rid of their inhibitions and be turned on 100%. You know, I want them turned on. So there is nothing, or at least a minimum thing, inhibiting them. This is the reason that I went into the study, is because I felt at my age that, you know, there was a lack in my Christian outreach. And I felt that it was not due to a lack of knowledge. It was not due to a lack of experience. And so gathering more knowledge and experience wasn't going to do anything for me. What I needed was motivation to use the knowledge and experience that I had in outreach. So I studied everything I get on the subject as to what turns people on. Now, we in our work are primarily involved in taking the new Christian and, of course, trying to build them up to a peak where they're really turned on. So, if it's a husband or wife or a young person, I just feel that instead of saying, you know, be thou turned on and hope something will happen, that we investigate and, where necessary, fill in some of these things. So this is the applicability and the purpose of the triangle, whether or not it is valid. You know, I'm not maintaining, but this is how we got
it. They're all important functions, and I can see that we should try to fulfill them, you know, the best of our ability. But we're handicapped. For instance, if I try to open up my law practice and make it work, and I've got 6 months, you know, and before my money runs out, it's hard for me to keep my wife turned on, you know, or myself for that matter, because it's a touch-and-go situation all the time. But yet, during this period, it has been one of the periods of my greatest growth, spiritually. So, I appreciate the triangle, but I still think...
Maybe you're planning to get to this some later, but in this area of ministering to the spiritual need, you know, like of your wife and helping at this point, what suggestions do you have at this point?
Well, I know my wife pretty well, having lived with her for nearly 30 years. And I know that as a person, if I cut off her outreach, you know, and said, now, you've got a full-time job and taking care of the family and me, and when I get home at night, why, I want you waiting there, you know, with a warm meal on the table and so forth, that she would not be a real motivated person. So I feel she has this need of, outreach is one thing. Now, I know that a woman spends most of her life, at home in the kitchen. Now, I know what Lord Sanius told us this on a NAF staff. He said that if you don't have enough money to do all you want to do in your home, start in the kitchen, because that's the wife where she spends most of her time. You know, a leaky faucet or something else that bugs her all the time, and she'll bug you about it. Well, she gets absorbed with this lower order thing. So I don't have a lot of practical things, but I try to see that she's not hindered with a washing machine that doesn't work, or just these things in a physiological realm, or the heater won't work, or this thing won't work, just purely physiological. When it comes to the long range thing, she's completely familiar with the plans that I have for the future. So if the Lord takes me off the scene, you know, that she will not have to radically change her way of life. And I think this is a source of her not being worried or concerned. I think it just helps keep her turned on. So, Max, I can kind of go right up the triangle on this, and I do give some time and attention to every one of these things in trying to see that she is a fulfilled person. Now, I think I know what her gifts are, and I encourage her in the use of them. And, help work out schedules. You know, I'll babysit if necessary for her to have an outreach. I know when she's happy and turned on, what her gifts are. Maybe this isn't very practical. Maybe somebody else could throw in something a little more practical.
Can I say something about it? I don't know how to explain this, and I don't know, I might be just,
calling out on a limb and sawing it behind me. But Romans 8:11 said, if the spirit of him that raised up Jesus from the dead dwell in you, he that raised up Christ from the dead shall also quicken your mortal bodies, which is your physical bodies, by his spirit that dwelleth in you. Now if you look through Romans 5, those five verses, it says for love to be shed abroad in our hearts, we're going to have trouble. 2 Corinthians 12:9, Paul says that I am made stronger in weakness. So I glory in problems, insults, perplexities. It says in Psalms that when I have a distressed heart, that God is able to enlarge me. James 1 says that when the trial of my faith, and I let patience have a perfect work in me, Christ is formed in me. Now, what I'm trying to say is, in my own experience, I believe that the Spirit of God can be such and meet your need that these other things will not be an issue. When we moved to Bloomington, our house flooded, our dryer burned out, the septic tank went out, my daughter was hit by a car and thrown 10 foot, my boy broke his arm, the stove burned out, we wrecked two cars. You can say,
rejoice in all things.
Right?
Yeah.
Amen.
Yeah, see, but yes, see, but then to say that and then to sense it inside us, and for the children to sense it inside them, to say, amen, let the house burn down. Jesus Christ permits it. See? And you start claiming like the precious promises on patience and grace and having your heart enlarged and losing your life so that you can find it. This is where I believe the spiritual realm, and I believe that Jesus Christ can meet your need in such a way that we could all say 2 Corinthians 12:9, that I take pleasure, I gladly glory in infirmities, problems, distresses, persecutions, insults, for when I am weak, Christ the Messiah may pitch a tent, yea, and abide on me. So I believe this is an experience that's very, you know, it's not very seldom. But I believe that the Spirit of God can so control our lives that we can be turned on and not care what happened to us.
Ken, let me ask you a question, Ira. What did you do about the wrecked car and the broken leg and the burned out stove? Are they still that way?
Oh, no. Oh, no. Yeah, right. But the matter...
Why didn't you just go on rejoicing, you and the family?
Sure. But we didn't let these things make a plaything out of us. They did not make a plaything out of us. They did not steal our joy. They did not make a plaything out of us and divert us from going out and having a hamburger or pizza. But we didn't let these things regulate our behavior or how we should determine, you know, what's going to go on.
But you did fix it.
Oh, yeah, we fixed it.
You took the boy to the doctor.
Right.
I think we're talking about the same thing here. You know, the person that is engaged in the Lord's work, using his gift, is a turned-on person, and you can't turn him off. But at the same time, you do pay attention to these things, because if you leave them unfixed, then I think that if you hadn't taken your boy to the hospital, he'd have been a turned off boy if you hadn't gotten that leg set in here.
Well, I see where you are talking about two different things.
I'm not talking about your attitude toward the thing. I'm just talking about, you know, that these are needs that have to be met if you're going to get your boy turned on.
Right. But the needs, I see, we're turning on my boy.
Yeah.
You're not turned off, but you do pay attention to these. You're going to turn him
good.
On.
Good, right.
One of the things is...
If your wife didn't have a washing machine and a stove, I bet she's going to give you a bad time.
Not really. We just go to the laundry and, you know, review verses and claim promises and enjoy each other.
All the time.
We did quite a while.
But you couldn't do that forever.
No.
Or you turn her off eventually.
And we'll probably turn her off.
I mean, everything's going to break down eventually, and then you live over too long. It's a matter of degree.
I see.
The ground.
Now what you're saying.
When
sure.
You start having to go to the filling station
to shave. Now, this is strictly just spur of the moment, but life is like a turned-on line, and there's these little blips, you know. But with Job, it was one big blip. And God showed through there he could take him all the way to bottom and bring him all the way back up, and he stayed the same all the way down. But he couldn't live like that forever. You know, and it was just a sample of put them all together, make one big one. But, you know, with us, it's, you know, a little one's all alone.
I have a question that's completely on a different subject here, I think.
You bet.
There's a point at which I have a problem here, and that is the idea of the wife being the helpmeet, and then her responsibilities in addition to that, outside of that. It seems to me that her greatest responsibility, of course, is to Jesus Christ, but the way of service, it seems to me, is also as being a helpmeet. And that by her being the proper helpmeet, I can accomplish twice as much for Christ. So, I wonder, it seems to me like in the experience you're sharing there that your wife does a great deal outside the home. What about this?
Well, we have brought up 7 children, and 6 of them were preschoolers at the same time, including a set of twins. So,
just the same wife
you still have. What I'm saying is that, you know, she has fulfilled a great deal of responsibility as a wife and mother. So what she is doing now was not always possible for her to do. But even in this time, you know, I recognized that in order for her to be completely fulfilled, I had to provide for some kind of an outreach, which I did. I felt that was my job. Now, I certainly feel that the wife's primary responsibility is just what you said, you know, the helpmate, you know, the wife and mother. But I just happen to know a great many people. Most Christian workers are high-powered. They marry high-powered women. And there's a lot of pastor and wife, little ripples that come out of this because they're both high-powered. And so she just does not find fulfillment, you know, completely in just being wife and mother. Many of them don't. Many of them do. But it's kind of an individual thing to check into, I think. And I think the best way to find out, you know, if a wife can be completely fulfilled in being wife and mother is just to ask her. And if she isn't, she's going to talk to somebody. And it may not be you. And I'm not talking about you personally. But she may talk to somebody else. But if she isn't, it'll come out. Somebody will know about it. Dr. Brown, can you bail us out?
At what point?
I know somebody who can. Max, if he'd say what he said last night about the shirts, I don't know if that's an awful good point, Max. You remember that?
I was just saying that I think there are times that the wife's ministry at times will be basically through her husband. She'll iron the shirts, and she ought to have the satisfaction of knowing that it'll go on the back of someone who'll be out having a ministry. And there are probably times, especially when they're small children, that this will be, to a large degree, her ministry will be through her husband. And I mean, she'll have some other ministry probably, which she probably needs something of a ministry outside even then. But to a large degree, the point I was trying to make last night was a single fellas that if I were a girl knowing what I know now and some of them come and said, would you marry me? I'd say, buddy, where are you going? You know, because largely when they do get married, so much of their life is wrapped up in their husband. If he's not doing anything, then she will be quite an unfulfilled person, I would think, because her husband's not having a ministry. And she's so tied down in the home, sometimes it's difficult for her to do anything outside. That I think many women are frustrated as a result of this. They want to have a ministry. They can't do it through their husband. So they're very frustrated.
I would give Dr. Brown a chance.
I really do not have a frame of reference for having any helpful information here. Fortunately, I married a fine young woman who does find fulfillment through home and family, and she gives me this assurance, even though she has other outlets. Oil painting and other things of this nature, which she is able to do within the context of the home. And so really, I'm not, I don't have the framework to be real helpful at this point, because all the way through, my wife has assured me that she finds her fulfillment in the home as a wife and mother. Now, I'll tell you one thing that I do watch for, though. I feel that even a woman who finds fulfillment in the home and family needs a periodic release or outlet from this responsibility. And consequently, we have sort of a mutual understanding that when we have been at the grind a certain length of time, and there seems to be a mutual agreement that we need some relief from the tension of my work and her home responsibilities, we spend money recklessly, getting away from home and away from the children and together somewhere where we can have a quiet retreat and just read meaningful books and be together for a while. And I find that some of the wisest and best money that I spend is the money that gets my wife away from these home responsibilities for a weekend retreat or an overnight retreat or something of this nature, a brief trip. I never begrudge the money that I spend in getting her away from these responsibilities periodically. This is a tremendous help.
I think the time we allocated to this has passed, and Max, I know when Chuck called me, he said, you know, well, I think George was set up for one, two, and three sessions. And I said, well, let's go Monday and Tuesday. And I had in mind to throw these things out, so I wasn't going to ask you until after it's over. But I do have another, and I don't want you to tell me now, but if you decide between now that you want another for tomorrow, well, I've got another session on the barrier of motivation. And this has to do with mostly what the Bible teaches about self-image, you know, and how to be yourself. Husband, wife, how to find out who you are. And a person is only fully motivated when they've found out who they are. That's related to this. So you can tell me later whether or not we go ahead tomorrow on this.